listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
I'm Rob Daly. This is your European football podcast, looking at the latest from Spain, Germany, Italy, France and more. My co-host is Chris Parrott.
Yeah, Barca were brilliant, but what now for Real Madrid after their 4-0 El Clasico thumping? We're joined by Spanish-based journalist Sam Marsden. Roberto Mancini's working his magic at Inter, and games were called off in Belgium and Greece, but for very different reasons.
It's an action-packed show today. BT Sports' Adam Summerton tells us about Juve against AC Milan, and ITV and Bundesliga commentator Mark Scott gives us the information on Javier Hernandez and his fine form.
This is Football in Europe.
An extended look at El Clasico on the way. Chris, you were supposed to come around my house to watch it. You stood me up.
I'm sorry.
I had all the beers in. I had some tapas ready to go.
That is suddenly making me feel
jealous.
So what's
your excuse? I mean, what's the...
I was eating goulash and dumplings in the Czech Republic.
Why were you eating goulash and dumplings in the Czech Republic?
I followed the Champions League trophy tour to Prague, which is an event they do. You get to take your picture with it, see the trophy. And the main thing was a sit-down interview with Vladimir Smitsa on all things, really. But particularly that 2005 win. It was, yeah, he's
surely everything's been said, though. I mean, a lot of stuff's been said about that final.
It has, but there's always little anecdotes. He came out with one I hadn't heard. Half time, they're 3-0 down, all in the dressing room, don't know what's hit them. He just says, "Jimmy, shower," to Traore. So Traore goes in the shower, I think he's coming off. 5 minutes later, the physio says, whispers in his ear, "Steve Finnan."
This is to Rafael Benitez.
Yeah, Steve Finnan's out. He can't come on the second half. So Benitez shouts, "Jimmy, get out of the shower." Traore comes out of the shower, puts his kit back on, goes out for the second half. And as he's going out, Benitez says, "Jimmy, I've always believed in you. Go out there, do it."
I haven't heard that before.
He then proceeds to have the best 45 minutes of his life. Those are Smitsa's words and his key in terms of coming back from 3-0 down to win it.
Very good. So that interview will be on Champions League Weekly or soon, something soon, I presume.
Yeah, it will be.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Chris, this is something we want people to tweet in about for next week's show. What's your favourite European football stadium? And the reason is because people may have seen this recently. 442 have published a list of what they think are the 100 best stadiums in the world. And La Bombonera, the home of Boca Juniors in Argentina, was the top stadium. But there are seven in the top 10 that are European, including the Camp Nou, Wembley, San Siro, Signal Iduna Park, the home of Dortmund, the Bernabeu, Old Trafford and the Allianz Arena in Munich.
Difficult to look past Signal Iduna, isn't it, with that yellow wall?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Would you add Celtic Park into that as well on a European
Yeah,
night?
Very possibly, yeah.
Pretty special.
Yeah, not bad. I'm sure it's in the list somewhere. But we want your suggestions, so tweet us at FIE Podcast. And tell us, what is your favourite European stadium, if you've been in particular, and why? We want some stories out of you. People have been tweeting in this week, Chris, about El Clasico and Barcelona's incredible 4-0 win at Real Madrid. I mean, it was spectacular. Here are some of the tweets in, because we've been asking for man of the match from the game. Newt Spartan says, "Iniesta without a doubt. The Bernabeu ovation said it all after he was wonderful and scored a goal." Stuart says, "Hard to look past Luis Suarez, two superb finishes, and his desire and work rate from the front inspires those around him." Charlie says, "Sergio Roberto." Ryan Miller says, "It's hard to single out anyone, but goes for Neymar." And Jamie says, "Claudio Bravo." Who pulled off some outstanding saves, and he did produce some incredible stops. Yeah. Chris, before we hear from our special guest on the show about this game, what were your thoughts on what was just, I mean, breathtaking, dynamic, exciting football from Barcelona?
Oh, they were brilliant, let's be honest. I did worry for Real Madrid going into it. I just wondered, I didn't expect them to lose 4-0 at home, but I did think Barca might go there
did
and
you?
Win.
Did you? I didn't. I said on the TalkSport on Friday, I think it'll be a score draw. I thought both sides might be slightly... apprehensives, but
I just think Neymar and Suarez are absolutely exceptional right now. Lionel Messi came on. All this really was without the magician that is Messi.
Yeah, the damage was done.
Neymar right now is the best player in the world, isn't he? Current
is
form.
That what you're saying? That's a big shout. I like that.
I'm not saying he is the best player in the world, but right now he's playing better football than anybody. He's only 23. Absolutely frightening. And Barcelona have set that bar now. My word, if they play like that and add a fit Messi into the mix. It's pretty frightening for Spain and for everybody else in the Champions League.
It is indeed. Tweet us with your favourite European stadium. Don't forget, using FIE podcast. We'll read those out next week. And please leave us a review on iTunes as well. Some people have done that again this week, and that's a big help in keeping us in the charts. And you can follow our Audioboom account for exclusive content.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
So the first El Clasico of the season was won by Barcelona. Two goals for Luis Suarez, one for Neymar, and that stunning strike from Andres Iniesta as well. Let's go to Barcelona-based journalist Sam Marsden, who writes for the newspaper Diario. Sam, thank you very much for coming on the programme. Just wanted to start with a question about Barcelona, really. I was just blown away by their performance. How good were they at the Bernabeu?
I spoke to a few people before the game in the office and stuff, and who I work with, and they were kind of maybe leaning towards like a draw or something. So no, I definitely didn't expect such a dominating performance, especially with the whole Messi thing. Despite the fact, obviously, Neymar and Luis Suarez had been great in Messi's absence.
It's been interesting because in England anyway, a lot's been made of how bad Real Madrid were and how much pressure there now is on Rafa Benitez instead of Barcelona's brilliance. So how much pressure is there on Rafa?
The concern is that he kind of did heed people wanted. He stuck with sort of Casemiro in this system where he's been a little bit more defensive this season. Whatever people say, he's a slightly more defensive manager. Obviously, they've got great players. It's not defensive system. It's just slightly more defensive than maybe what Madrid have been used to. And then he's thrown that out the window for the Clásico sort of to popular demand to play a midfield of James, Modric and Cruz, which is arguably costing the game when you see the complete space they've lost in midfield. I feel a bit sorry for him in a way as well, because he's been up against it from the start and all of a sudden his job's on the line. I don't think he's going to be sacked right now, but it's impossible really. Like if you ask me today if you can see him last into the end of the season, I'd say it's impossible. So what he does between now and the next few weeks is really, I really don't know. I would struggle to give him advice at the moment.
Sam, we're just speaking to you just hours before Florentino Perez speaks at a press conference. I think, what's the expectation that it's going to be the dreaded vote of confidence?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's what Perez has done it in the past with Ancelotti last season and did keep him on till the end of the season in the end, but it was kind of the beginning of the end of Ancelotti. It was with Mourinho as well. It was more of a mutual separation, but if it wasn't, I think Mourinho would have gone the same way as Ancelotti. And the fans, they didn't actually turn on Benitez during the game that I know of. There were jeers for Cristiano Ronaldo and there were chants for Florentino Perez to resign.
Sam, Luis Enrique said that performance will go down in history. And one notable thing as well was surely the fact that Andres Iniesta was applauded off the pitch. I mean, what's been the reaction to that happening in Spain?
I don't quite know how it translates properly, but basically Luis Enrique sort of referred him to like a world heritage site. He's like, you know, he's a footballer for everyone to enjoy. And I think Iniesta is kind of one of those players that can transcend a rivalry, maybe, as seen with the support of the Madrid fans when he went off. But he's a popular figure in Spain anyway, obviously, because of the winning World Cup goal. So it's not uncommon for him to receive a standing ovation wherever he goes from the away fans.
The win, we have to look at the league table after, you know, El Clasico is this sort of bubble, isn't it? But 6 points now, Barcelona ahead of Real Madrid. Presumably it's their title to lose. That must be, I guess, what the papers and what you're saying in Spain.
Yeah, I mean, 6 points in a league where, I mean, Barca have lost twice this season, but it feels like both Barca and Madrid have struggled a bit at the beginning of the season with injuries and stuff. And it felt that maybe... Well, Barca's lost, they never really got going at the start of this season. And the loss to Celta Vigo was certainly a deserved loss. The one at Sevilla was a bit more of a surprise. They played a bit better there and probably deserved something from the game. There's a feeling now that Barcelona are coming a bit stronger. They've sort of put behind them the fact they had a bad pre-season and they're obviously not going to drop many points from here, you wouldn't imagine. They've got Messi coming back into the side now. They've got Arda Turan and Alex Vidal to come back in January. So 6 points potentially for Real Madrid to turn over is huge. And if you just, I know I'm jumping ahead a fair few months here, but if they then beat Real Madrid at the Camp Nou next year, that would be a 9-point lead, which is effectively a 10-point lead because of the head-to-head. So they could, in theory, like lose 3 or 4 games, presuming Madrid will drop points along the way. And as long as they beat Madrid at home, they could still win the league.
And Sam, just a quick one. With the white hankies, do fans just always bring those to a match in case they're going to be unhappy?
Some people do. I'm not sure how much the case of it was. There's definitely stadiums where they have them more, like Valencia, they're often quite popular. The white hankies at the Bernabeu on Saturday, I don't think they were all hankies because they'd done a big mosaic before the game. So they were kind of like, they'd kind of constructed their own bad image there, because a lot of fans were waving like the white sort of sheets things that they've been given to hand up for the, hold up for the, you know, like the tifos they have before the game.
That is excellent. That is Real Madrid support. Look, imagine the fans thinking, this is hanky sized and weighted. This will do perfectly. Sam, thank you very much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Elsewhere in La Liga at the weekend, by the way, Real Sociedad won 2-0 against Sevilla following the departure of David Moyes. Sevilla 11th in the table. They have beaten Real Madrid and Barca this season. Meanwhile, Atletico won 1-0 at Real Betis. An early goal from Koke puts them up to second, 4 points behind Barca.
There was also the Galician derby. Depor beat Celta Vigo 2-0. Two defeats in a row now for Celta, who drop out of the Champions League places. And Villarreal were held by Eibar.
Yeah, I saw that Sid Lowe said it's a shame they put that derby on at the same weekend as El Clasico. So some games were called off across Europe, Chris. Let's start with this one in Belgium. Lokeren against Anderlecht. And this is all related to the security issues around Brussels and the like.
Yeah, the city pretty much in lockdown at the moment. Brussels, after the terror attacks in Paris, called off because they couldn't guarantee the safety. It was the Lokeren mayor that made the decision. The game was up. High risk, if you like, that was what it was labelled as. So they needed more police to police it, but they couldn't get more police because those officers couldn't be moved away from Brussels because of the situation. So the only decision was, unfortunately, to call that game off.
Yeah, stretched resources has been a major issue with a lot of these games. Meanwhile, a match called off for very different reasons. Panathinaikos against Olympiakos. Now, I saw a European football journalist, Andy Brassel, tweeting about this. He was at the game. For Copenhagen, he was filming a film for them, but no football was played in the end in the Derby of the Eternal Enemies, Chris.
No, wouldn't mind watching the film if they are going to publish it still. Derby of the Eternal Enemies, it's one of the most hate-filled derbies, I think, in European football. Two Greek powerhouses, no away fans allowed. There were rumours that Panathinaikos supporters were going to try and get it called off before the match. They threw a flare which hit Alfred Finnbogason, the Icelandic forward who plays for Olympiakos. So the referee called it off, and at that point, all hell broke loose. They rioted with police in the stands, on the pitch. Fascinating, amazing from the club today, though, Panathinaikos. You thought they might have come out and said, oh, you know, this is awful, etc.
Yeah, condemn the actions of a minor few, that kind of thing.
Oh, no, they've had a go at the referee for calling it off. Totally wrong and inexplicable decision from Andreas Papas to postpone the start of the match is what they've said. They've asked the fans to make a peaceful rally on Wednesday to complain about the decision. But I mean, we're not there. We don't understand all the ins and outs. But it does seem rather unfair to blame the referee.
Well, the footage is extraordinary. I think there's some on the Guardian website at the moment of fans literally fighting with the riot police. Olympiakos doing well in the league anyway. And of course, Gus Poyet is over in Greece at the moment. Chris, how's he getting on?
Well, his side are up to fourth now. They beat the bottom team, Panthrakikos, I think that's how you pronounce it.
We'll go with that.
2-1 win. And as we mentioned, it's a really interesting move, I think, for Gus Poyet to go to, if we talk of Panathinaikos and Olympiakos as the big two, well, IAEK Athens are the third of the really big, huge Greek sides.
You're going with Poyet? Not Poyet. I'm a Poyet guy.
Would you like to know something?
Go on.
Here we go. My one of my best friend's girlfriends is Uruguayan.
Yeah.
And she says it
tenuous.
Should be Pochet.
What?
Yeah.
Pochet?
Pochet. Yeah, and she's cousins with Sebastian Coates. Interestingly.
Oh, well. Now let's turn our attention to Italian football. Juve went into their game with AC Milan, having beaten them five times in a row.
This is Football in Europe, Serie A Roundup.
Joining us now on Football in Europe is Adam Summerton, the BT Sport commentator. Adam, thanks for coming on the show again. Last night, on Sunday night, you commentated on Inter winning 4-0 against Frosinone. Inter don't score many goals. It looked like a comprehensive scoreline. What happened?
Well, Inter took the lead through Biabiani just before the half-hour mark. After what I have to say had been surprising, a fairly even start. Frosinone created chances before Inter took the lead. It was a positive start from the newly promoted side. But I've got to say, I was delighted for Biabiani on a personal point. You'll all know about the heart problems that he had that really halted his career, and Mancini's shown faith in him, brought him back to Inter. And that was his first goal since May of 2014. It was his first Serie A start since August of 2014. So that was great for him. And they got the second into, I think it was about 8 minutes into the second half, and a delighted goal scorer in Icardi, because so much of the talk before the game was about how Inter just still aren't scoring enough goals this season, and Icardi has not been able to replicate the goal-scoring form that he showed last season. So he'd have been delighted about that. Yaya set him up. And then in the closing stages, I think it's fair to say that Frosinone tired somewhat and rather folded, and Mario and Brozovic scored two late goals. But it's the biggest victory since Mancini returned to Inter, and it's put them 2 points clear at the top of the table.
Are you convinced that there's enough there from Inter to suggest that they could win the title?
I'm not entirely convinced, no. And I think there are some areas of the team clearly goal-scoring, despite the fact that they won that game by 4-0 is an issue. And I think the clear problems with creativity. I think with Melo and Kondogbia in central midfield, there isn't enough creativity there. It's one of the reasons that, remarkably, people have even been talking about Inter showing an interest in bringing Andrea Pirlo back from MLS before the game against Frosinone. Just to give you another example, Icardi had only had 12 chances created for him by teammates in Serie A this season. That was in 12 games. So again, that perhaps shows why he's not been scoring as many goals as he had done previously. But if you're to look at them defensively, it's very hard to argue. Only conceded 7 goals in 13 games. I mean, that is absolutely remarkable. Jovetic is another player as well, who I think if they're to truly challenge for the title, they need to get more goals out of him. He hasn't scored since they beat Carpi 2-1 at the end of August.
Juventus against Milan was probably the standout fixture at the weekend. Milan losing 1-0 at the Juventus Stadium. Dybala with the only goal of the game, and Juve looked very strong at points. And were it not for some saves from Milan's 16-year-old goalkeeper Donnarumma, the scoreline could have been far more severe. A fine goal for Dybala. Adam, what do you reckon the result says about both teams' ambitions for the season now?
Well, I think that Juventus have slowly but surely crept themselves back into the title race. I really do think they will be involved come the end of the season. They're 9 points off top spot right now. But you know, when you look at the quality that they still have, despite the fact that, well, we know the players that left during the summer, Dybala for me is crucial for them, because they need him to replicate the energy and the goals to as greater an extent as he can at such a young age that Carlos Tevez had last season. So there's a lot of pressure on him, and I think he's responding to that pressure now as well. And having Marchisio back involved, missed him at the start of the season through injury, I think massive plus for Juve. So they are creeping back into the title race, and we all know that with the quality that they have, particularly at the back as well, that they can string a real run of results together. That said, I think Palermo coming up at the weekend is going to be a hugely significant game for them, but I still genuinely think that Juventus will be very much in with a shout of winning the title come the end of the season.
Fiorentina needed 2 goals from Nikola Kalinic in the second half to save a draw against Empoli at home. That game finished 2-2. Napoli picked up a 2-0 win at Hellas Verona. Goals from Insigne and, unsurprisingly, Higuain. Napoli using some interesting techniques to keep across their defensive structure.
Well, I mean, defensively this season under Sarri, compared to how they were under Benitez last season, it's been a huge improvement. I mean, they've conceded half the number of goals so far in Serie A that they had after 13 games at the same point last season. It hasn't taken away from their goal-scoring threat. They've still scored 24 goals. To build on the point that you were making about these training ground things, there was a video put on Twitter. It must have come from the club, although it was put out by Gazzetta, of a drone that films over the training, which Sarri is, I think he used it at Empoli, has been using it from the start of the season at Napoli. And it's clearly a great piece of kit, and he uses it to obviously look for himself how the defensive shape is working, but also shows it to the players. And that is one of the things that's being credited with this vast improvement in Napoli defensively. I think Koulibaly and Albiol have looked very good. Hussai as well has been a great addition from Empoli, came with Sarri from Empoli. Because when you think of the money that's swashing about in football, I wouldn't have thought a drone would be that expensive to football clubs, but it's clearly working for Napoli and Sarri. He's a great innovator, but I think that he's improved what was already there as well.
It's interesting you say that, because I went to Spain to do a shoot with Dinamo Moscow last year, and we had a drone that the camera crew that we were using used to film part of the training session, and the players had never seen it before. They were just completely baffled by this contraption flying over their head. So this mustn't be used that much in Europe. Maybe Sarri is going to set a trend with this technology. Adam as well. Sampdoria lost 1-0 at Udinese. Vincenzo Montella is their new head coach. What can Sampdoria expect from him? He's got a big job on, and of course he was at Fiorentina previously.
He has got a big job on, but I think it's an excellent appointment potentially. He did a good job for me at Fiorentina, just couldn't get them beyond that fourth place that he achieved several times. And he'll go to he inherits a Sampdoria side that are perhaps underachieving. I think they've got some good players there. They're 12th right now. They've taken 16 points from their first 13 games. I mean, Zenga was always an odd appointment for me, I've got to say. I mean, a much travelled as a coach. We all know how good a player he was, but it was a surprising appointment. He very nearly lost his job, so reports said, in Italy, when they had that terrible result in the Europa League against Vojvodina, even before the Serie A season had got underway. So even then, it looks as though, you know, there could be problems. But, you know, if you look what he's got available, what he's got to work with there, Vincenzo Montella, I think in Adair, he's got a good goal scorer, 9 goals he's got so far this season. Luis Muriel as well up top has got plenty of goals in him. Sarno's there as well. You know, Fernando, who they got in from Shakhtar, Barreto is a very good player in Serie A. So, you know, I think they do have the raw materials there, but it's going to take time, I think, for Montella to unpick what has been going wrong. So, yeah, you're right to say he's got a tough job.
This is Football in Europe, Bundesliga Roundup.
So a big thanks to BT Sport commentator Adam Summerton for joining us. Chris, Bundesliga now. Schalke were beaten 3-1 at home by Bayern on Saturday evening. It was the biggest fixture of the weekend. Javi Martinez amongst the scorers there, along with Thomas Müller. Schalke did actually play pretty well until the headed goal from Martinez. They were just caught out by the fact he was in the box, full stop. But there was trouble at the game. Numerous people were injured after some so-called Bayern fans attempted to effectively storm part of the Schalke stadium, as well with some Bochum fans from a team from the second tier. The Bayern chairman, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, says the club has distanced itself from those people involved, adding that violence can't be tolerated, particularly when there's already this added security at Bundesliga games after what happened at Hanover and in Paris as well. So I'm sure we haven't heard the last of that one. Chris, elsewhere, regardless, Bayern extend their lead at the top of the table.
Yet to 8 points, because Dortmund surprisingly beaten 3-1 by Hamburg on Friday night. It was a rare off day for Thomas Tuchel, really, since taking charge. Lewis Holtby amongst the goal scorers. Aubameyang did get a late one back after they were 3-0 down. They had numerous chances. If they'd taken them, they might have won 4-3, but they weren't at their best. A few articles criticising Mats Hummels, actually, after right. He got an own goal. And the problem is, when Bayern win every week, is that you just cannot slip up if you're going to be in the title race.
I think the thing is, Dortmund have already exceeded expectations.
Yeah.
I don't think people expected them to necessarily be in a title race anyway. So, but they will be disappointed with that. Ingolstadt 3, Darmstadt 1 was a game I commentated on Sunday. That was between the two promoted teams to the league. And only Bayern have a better defence than Ingolstadt. But they won by 3-1 in the end, beating Darmstadt, coming from behind. The game was actually delayed by 15 minutes because of security issues as well. That happened at a couple of games in the Bundesliga. But well played to Ingolstadt. The club only formed in 2004, financed by Audi, and getting themselves a notable win because they've barely been scoring any goals in the Bundesliga this season. Hertha Berlin against Hoffenheim. Chris, I thought this was going to be called off because of the snow at one point. It was so heavy, but Hertha got eked out a 1-0 win.
They did. Maybe it should have been called off. It wasn't the most entertaining. A really remarkable stat, actually. Eugene Polanski scored an own goal. That was the only goal as Hertha won. Check this. First Bundesliga game without a single effort on target since Opta started recording those stats back in 2004.
God.
Now that is what you call a drab.
Elsewhere, Wolfsburg beat Werder Bremen 6-0, a great result for them. In a game of two teams in the relegation zone, Augsburg won 4-0 at Stuttgart. While Javier Hernandez is in fine form at the moment, he scored at the weekend, and earlier I caught up with ITV and Bundesliga commentator Mark Scott, who covered Leverkusen's 3-1 win at Eintracht Frankfurt.
Well, he's just playing in a team that I think really suits his style. I mean, that brace that he got in the weekend made it 12 in 15 competitive appearances for Leverkusen. He scored in his last 7 games in all competitions. He is a man who is on fire. And interestingly, David De Gea, the Manchester United keeper, said recently that if he was actually the boss at United, he would never have sold him. And, well, it wasn't quite dissent, but he sort of indicated he wasn't quite sure why Louis van Gaal felt compelled to let Javier Hernandez leave and move on to, first of all, Real Madrid on loan for a bit, and now at Leverkusen, where things are really going well for him. But I think it's the style that Leverkusen play. And under Roger Schmidt, it's a sort of a high press game where he's not playing isolated on his own up top. He's got good support from Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Their partnership has been key, I think, to Hernandez going on to score as many goals as he has done. And it's just the space that he's afforded that I think has allowed him to do so well. And again, at the weekend, Çalhanoğlu set up his second goal of that particular match, which is a point in fact, really.
Do you think some Premier League teams will look at the fact that Hernandez was linked with them and linked with other English sides and think they've missed a trick?
Well, it's sort of interesting that you say that, because I think maybe the league and the way Leverkusen play suits Chicharito, and that's something that maybe didn't transmit itself to the Premier League or other divisions quite as well. It's a, you know, Leverkusen have got this very sort of, you know, compressed style of play. They like to get the ball out wide as much as possible and attack down the flanks, and he can then make his run through the centre. And the amount of goals he's got where he's just waited on the shoulder of the last man, then made a move, normally with Çalhanoğlu playing it through, has been sort of stupendous to see that happen so often. And I'm not quite sure if he would get that sort of style of play if he was in the Premier League. So I know that it worked very well for him at Manchester United that season, but that was under Sir Alex Ferguson. And obviously David Moyes and Louis van Gaal haven't been quite as adventurous when they've been in charge. So I think it's just a very good fit for him at the moment at Leverkusen. And you know what it's like when you're a striker. When you're hot, you're hot. And at the moment, he just can't miss.
And is he preferred to Stefan Kiesling, who has been a star striker for Leverkusen for many years?
Yeah, absolutely. Because, Hernandez, before the weekend, he averaged a goal every 100 minutes on average. Stefan Kiesling, who came on to replace him late on, averages one every 374 minutes. So you can see that there's a bit of a difference there. Kiesling really is struggling for form. To be honest with you, I think he looks a bit shot, both mentally and physically. When he came on, he just didn't look like a man who believed he was going to find the net. He actually had a couple of decent chances to score himself, but unlike Hernandez, he didn't have that clinical finishing edge to him. And at the moment, there is no doubt about it that Kiesling has been replaced and Hernandez is the new king.
Mark, be honest, how much do you like saying Hakan Çalhanoğlu?
I think that, you know, once you get to grips with how to say his name, then you can have lots of fun with it.
Let's talk about Eintracht Frankfurt very quickly, because they're the team that have denied Bayern a win, the only team who've denied Bayern a win in the Bundesliga this season. But this is a home loss for them. So what do you make to that?
Yeah, it's interestingly because, they drew 0-0 with Bayern. And funnily enough, you know, everyone was coming out to praise them. You know, well done, stopped their winning streak, brilliant. But Armin Wey afterwards, you know, it was like, it's a good result, but I didn't really like the performance that much. And to explain what he means by that is that he wants to play more expansive football, but they did the proverbial parking of the bus against Bayern. It worked very well, to be fair to them, because what they did is that they doubled up on the flanks. They forced Bayern through the middle. They couldn't get through. They had very sort of like strong holding midfielders, and Bayern found it impossible to score. Brilliant. But he was like, oh, well, yeah, you know, it's a good point, but, you know, I'm not really too happy with the performance, which is interesting for a manager to come out and say that. And he's been quite outspoken recently as well, with Frankfurt, you know, sort of teetering around mid-table. He was like, look, what do people expect? We're Eintracht Frankfurt. The one thing we can't change is the budget we've got to work with. They are a club that likes to make sure they only spend what they can afford. And he said, look, if you want anything better than that, you better find a magician rather than a manager. And if you know one, then I'll be happy to give him a call. So You know, and something else which was quite amusing is in the build-up to this game, he wasn't very happy about the players that were out on international duty already. He had a couple that were in South America. He had another one that was playing, I think, out in Cambodia as well. So, you know, the usual annoyance with that. But then in the final training session before the game, there's a monster truck event taking place at Frankfurt's Commerzbank Arena next year, and the press conference happened to be scheduled for the same time as they were training. So during the tail end of the training session, Vase said he could barely be heard because you had the 1,000 horsepower engines revving up all around the place as they were promoting the event taking place next year, which I don't think improved his mood too much either. So not a happy man at the moment. And despite that draw against Bayern, Frankfurt haven't won any of their last four at home now, and that is a slight concern for them.
Who does like monster trucks?
I mean, I don't know. It's sort of going back to a bygone era, isn't it? It's like getting the, you know, fax machines out and telex and, you know, all the old school sort of things coming out.
Yeah, it's very 90s, it seems, anyway. Mark, thank you very much for joining us on Football in Europe.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.
OK, we're into the final part of the show. Let's look at French football now. After a very difficult week, the decision was made that all games would go ahead, but without any away fans due to security reasons, purely because they feel it might stretch the security resources that they did have after the Paris attacks. Chris, what happened at the weekend?
Well, football took a bit of a backseat, as you might imagine. They came out, the Marseillaise was played, minute silence. There were also candles in the stands at lots of games, which was quite a sight, actually. On the pitch, Paris Saint-Germain, 8 wins in a row there. Their march towards the title continued. A big day for Hervin Ogenda, just 20, scored his first league goal for Paris Saint-Germain. They think he's got a big future, and he's almost certainly going to have a Ligue 1 winner's medal. Let's be honest, they're 13 points clear now at Paris Saint-Germain after beating Lorient 2-1. Not so good for Saint-Étienne. They were beaten by Marseille. Really good win that, actually, for OM, because they've been struggling. And the two surprise packages of the season, who are still there around the European places in the Champions League spot, Caen and Angers, they drew 0-0. And if fourth in England because of Chelsea's troubles is anybody's, then third and the Champions League spot in France is a similar position at the moment.
But a bad weekend for former Newcastle defender Yanga Mbiwa.
Very much so. He got a 1 in L'Équipe.
1 out of 10.
1 out of 10. It's happened 10 times, apparently, since 1998.
10 times a player's been given a 1 out of 10, so yeah, it's very rare.
Saw that from Julien Laurens, who's on the BT Sport a lot, but a disastrous day for him. He scored an own goal for Lyon. Massive win for Nice, though. They're up to fourth. Another team who will be looking now at, you know, Marseille are struggling. Lyon aren't as good as they were last season. You know, who's going to get those Champions League places? And a great win for them. A dreadful day for the former Newcastle centre-half.
Very funny. In Portugal, Sporting played Benfica for the third time this season. And again, Jorge Jesus gets one over on his former club. Sporting beating Benfica 2-1 in the cup.
Yeah, well, they were sick of the sight of him in the summer, let alone now, a couple of months later. First time, apparently, in 62 years that Sporting have beaten Benfica 3 times in a season. And, of course, they will play again after...
Well, they won't want to. They won't want to play.
They certainly won't want to. And 7 of the 11 players that finished it were in the Sporting team were from their academy. So good signs there. So you mentioned extra time when Kostas Mitroglou had actually given Benfica the lead as well.
So they have a manager who's brilliant in the transfer market and they have a good academy. Yeah. Sporting might be on for a very good season. PSV Eindhoven drew 2-2 at Willem II in their game ahead of the Manchester United tie. That ended a 5-game winning streak for Philip Cocu's team. Elsewhere in the Netherlands, Chris?
Yeah, well, PSV dropped points in the title race because Feyenoord won 5-0 against Twente, who are really struggling, actually. Won the league a couple of years ago under Steve McLaren, didn't they? Ajax 5-1 winners. To maintain top spot, 3 clear of Feyenoord. But an interesting one there. A lot of fans left. There were a lot of empty seats in protest against the sacking of Wim Jonk from their youth system.
Yeah, I saw this. So they were 5-1 up against Canberra late on, and I saw lots of empty seats in the stands. So that was over Wim Jonk's departure.
Yeah, there's nothing like an internal battle at Ajax, though, isn't it? It's been going on for years.
There's been a few. And and a Chelsea loanee doing pretty well as well.
Absolutely. Lewis Baker, who is, I think, of all on the Chelsea production line, Ruben Loftus-Cheek aside, maybe Baker's the one they expect. I read an article actually saying that they didn't sign Dele Alli from MK Dons, Chelsea. because they had Baker. And only one player in the whole of the Eredivisie has created more goal-scoring chances now than Lewis Baker, got an assist at the weekend.
And that's a good sign in a very technical league as well, isn't it? Also on Saturday, I covered Zenit's 3-0 win over Ural. They closed the gap on CSKA at the top of the table because they lost at home to Krylia Sovetov, a surprising result. And Zenit can win their Champions League group with the draw against Valencia this week. They have already qualified for the next round. And Chris, let's finish in Turkey because quite a few former Premier League names are applying their trade there now, and they were busy at the weekend.
Yeah, they all scored, basically. Nani and Van Persie for Fenerbahce, Podolski for Galatasaray.
Tick.
Samuel Eto'o for Antalyaspor.
Yeah, all quality so far.
And Hugo Rodiega. He got two. Interesting, though, Slaven Bilic, of course, left Besiktas in the summer to go to West Ham. Well, they're top Besiktas. They've won 8 of their last 10. In Turkey, absolutely bang in for Mario Gomez is the main man there at the moment. He scored a penalty, and Galatasaray mentioned them that they had goals from Lucas Podolski at the weekend. Well, they have a new coach, Mustafa Denizli has taken over. He's won the title before in Turkey, but this week alone, that 90s icon Taffarel, the goalkeeper, will be in charge of them in the Champions League, but only until the weekend.
Ah, looking forward to that. Chris, you enjoyed the show?
Very much so.
Yes, me too. Tweet us your favourite European stadiums, as we discussed at the start of the programme, using FIE Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes, and you can follow our Audioboom account for exclusive content.
For more, head to the website footballineurope.co.uk.